When you run a private practice, you're not just a therapist, you're a business owner, a compliance officer, a marketing team, and most of all, a human being. The team at Alma gets that at a very real level. They make it easy to take insurance with support and with tools that keep your private practice running smoothly so that you can practice and focus on what matters the most, which is serving our clients well. They have an all-in-one EHR, a peer community, as well as free CEUs, meaning that you're not navigating the private practice journey on your own. You can learn more about Alma and the awesome services that they provide over at sellingthecouch.com/Alma. Alma is spelled A-L-M-A, and if you go through that link, you get 2 months absolutely free. sellingthecouch.com/Alma.
As STC has grown and with this podcast, obviously my goal is to share information and helpful resources to make your private practice journey and your journey from therapist to online business owner much easier. But my other main goal is to hopefully be a good model of what self-care looks like. I don't often, you know, all the time get it right. But, you know, I think being able to set these and have these moments of rest, I think it's so important in just the human journey and also in the entrepreneurial journey. We live in this world where things are always go, go, go. And I think like rest is so good for the mind, body, and soul. So during my sabbatical, I will honestly just be taking a lot of downtime, I think, to just kind of pause and reflect on these past 7 years. I mean, I can't believe, first of all, it's been 7 years. And I remember starting this podcast and, you know, the first, I sat on the idea for 5 months. And when I finally released an episode, I think we had 9 downloads that very first day. And I would have been just honestly so happy if I knew 7 years ago, if we got up to like 10,000 or something. I would have been like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. I can't believe like we have, 10,000 folks here or there, right? Listening to the podcast. What I didn't expect is we're about to hit 1.5 million downloads, which is insane. And thank you from the bottom of my heart. You know, I consider STC my life's work, and I consider it such a privilege to be able to serve you. Thank you for taking the time to listen. I was thinking a lot about, what to do for this final episode. And I went back and forth on a bunch of different ones. And, in this season, I find myself really passionate about online courses. I've been a course creator since 2015 with the Healthcasters course. I've probably made every mistake in the book. I could probably write the book on every mistake when it comes to course creation. I was so scared to launch an online course. And the Healthcasters course is a podcasting course for therapists. And the reason I launched it was because, several of our colleagues were just so gracious enough to reach out to do consults with me to launch their podcast soon after I had launched my own. And I was, had this thought of like, I wonder if I could share this knowledge in a different way without trading time for income. And, we had 8 initial buyers, and then we didn't have buyers for a while. And it's been a slow and steady growth for me. I haven't had the exponential growth or anything like that. I suspect for most course creators that have successful courses, it's slow. It's not the stuff that we see on social media. But, we've been fortunate we just passed our 273rd student in the course. In terms of revenue, we passed the $300,000 mark in 2021. And it's crazy. It's crazy to be able, to be able to serve so many people in that way. And second, for most of us, right? Like either in our families of origin or because of what we've seen in internship and practicum and seeing our colleagues, right? Our idea of work is basically trading time for income. And now some of us go into group practices and we sort of change that, right? You can have other clinicians working under you, and you get a portion of that income, which I think it's an awesome model. But I think there's also this other model, right? Like that whole model of trading time for income, I've been reading up on this stuff, and the original concept came during the Industrial Revolution when most folks were working in factories. And even as the internet has now become mainstream, and we see this even in the pandemic, right? So many of us can now see clients all over the state. You know, if you're part of PsychPack, you can, you know, see clients in multiple states, all of these things, right? And the world is changing. How we consume information is changing. There is a mental health crisis, I would even say, right, in the midst of this pandemic. There are so many folks that need our services, and yet there are not enough of us, right? And so what do we do in that gap? And I think online courses can really fill a gap, because the reality is there will be folks that who need our help, but who will never step foot into a therapy room, right? And never see a therapist, but they're willing to consume and learn information in different ways. Now, I know that many of us have been thinking like, hey, I really want to launch an online course, but I don't even know where to get started. And I think a lot of times many of us can feel like, okay, I just want to like record something and get it out there. And in today's episode, what I actually want you to do, and what I want to encourage you with today, is to be able to take a step back and analyze things a little bit. And so I titled this The 7 Questions to Ask Before Launching Your Online Course. When I talk to our colleagues, I find myself saying like these 7 kind of questions before you even launch a course, like to figure out if the course idea is a viable one. And so what I want to do today is just like be of service to you and just give you that information, so that when you're thinking about your course, you actually are creating a course that has income potential, significant income potential, and not something where you just record it and then no one ever sort of buys, right? So the very first question to ask when you're thinking about your online course idea is, have people paid me one-on-one for this course idea? Now, this could be either via therapy or consultation or supervision, anything like that, right? But have people actually paid me one-on-one for my course idea? Now, this sounds like a really basic and simple thing, like, Mel, like, duh, like, why would I do that? But I can't tell you the amount of colleagues that I've come across and had conversations with that want to create courses that are either not in their niche, or it's something that people have never paid them for. And the reason I say it is because a product that people have paid for is a different type of product than versus one that people have never paid for, right? You've actually validated it on sort of the best level, which is people actually paying for that product. The second question I always mention to our colleagues is, can I see myself being in this space for 10 years? So whatever your course idea is, right, whatever that niche or that specialization, maybe it's like a presenting concern, right? Like erectile dysfunction, right? One of our colleagues is Heather England, who was a previous guest on this podcast, has a course on that, right? Can you see yourself in a presenting concern or working with a specific population for 10 plus years? You might be like, Mel, that is a long time, a decade. You want me to like be in that space? And I would say yes. And the reason is because, you know, I was listening to a recent podcast conversation with Sahil Bloom and Ali Abdaal, and they're both very successful, like 7-figure online business owners. And they both said this idea. They said, you know, when they have had conversations with wildly successful entrepreneurs, the most successful ones think in long runways. And when they were saying like long runways, what does that mean? That's like 10 plus years, right? And I can see as a course creator the value and the wisdom of that, because honestly, in the course creation journey, the first couple of years, you're trying to get your bearings, you're trying to get those students, you're trying to figure out a system, But it's really, for me, it has been in like year five and beyond where I'm now starting to think like, okay, what is there beyond the podcasting course, right? This is actually where the online course mastermind came from, because I noticed a lot of podcasters wanted to monetize their podcasts via courses, right? And I just thought, you know, what is that next sort of offering? And the thing is, if you don't sort of think in long runways, you never get to that point where you're thinking of offerings beyond just the online course. And this is actually something that I learned. Doing my own thing, but then also just studying other successful entrepreneurs, which is, you know, in the online course space, people make money from online courses, but usually the money is, real money is in the follow-up, right? So what is that, once they consume the online course, what is that next thing, right? And it could be anything from like a mastermind that I'm running, you know, like the mastermind I'm running, could be group coaching, it could be intensives, could be retreats, could be conferences, whatever it is. But you really have to have a long runway, because it's just practically for most of us, it takes a while to build out each of these things. And so just thinking in those long runways, I think gives you a lot more enjoyment of the process, and it gives you a lot more grace and compassion for yourself, because otherwise you feel all of this pressure to like build out all of these things. And it just, I found generally when you have too much pressure like that, it usually doesn't lead to like successful courses on sort of multiple levels. Now, the third question I always ask our colleagues to consider is this course idea a massive pain versus an annoying inconvenience? Is it a massive pain versus an annoying inconvenience? Now, you might be like, and we've all seen this, I think, as therapists, like have done any sort of like studying into marketing, right? They say, this question usually comes up, right? Like, think about your ideal avatar, you know, the person that you want to serve, and think about what, you know, as therapists, we manage so many roles in private practice, from being a clinician to a business owner to doing all the things that we need to do to market our practice. It's really easy for all of us to feel overwhelmed, especially when we are juggling so many things. That's where the team at Alma comes in. This is a platform that I would consider if you are a solo practitioner that is either wants to take insurance or that is private pay, but just wants to hedge a little bit, especially to account for periods of economic uncertainty or weird things like hyperinflation, like we've been dealing with in more recent times. Alma makes it easier than ever to build a thriving private practice. They include a bunch of different cool stuff. So one is they have a members-only platform where you can exchange resources with other clinicians, exchange referrals, and just find support. They have consultation groups as well. And they also offer CEUs as part of your membership at no additional cost. These are both live and on demand. Now, in order to get credentialed with Alma, you know, typically to get credentialed with insurance, it takes months and months, but Alma actually has a 45-day credentialing process, and you actually get increased reimbursement rates. So they're often higher than if you were to go just through the insurance carrier and if you were just to apply as a solo practitioner. And the really cool thing is they guarantee payback within 2 weeks of when you see the client, so that you can ensure your income stays steady. You can see as few as like one client or two clients just to hedge a little bit. And Alma also has a HIPAA compliant telehealth platform so that everything is safe and secure. Alma also has a bunch of different stuff to support clinicians, all the way from workshops and all sorts of things, as well as an online directory so that you can continue to get referrals coming your way. The best part, the team at Alma was able to hook the Selling the Couch family and listeners with a unique code, which is over at sellingthecouch.com/Alma. That's actually for 2 months, absolutely free on Alma's platform. This is a non-advertised, like non-publicly advertised discount. So definitely encourage you to check it out over at sellingthecouch.com/Alma for a 60-day free trial just to see if it makes sense for you. Keeps them up at night, right? And that is, I think, another way to say this massive pain versus an annoying inconvenience. So basically, does the course solve a massive pain? Is this something they're like, oh my gosh, I need this because my life, my relationships, my health is going to be significantly better. And if I don't do this, there's going to be sort of drastic implications to one of those realms of my life. The fourth question I encourage our colleagues to consider is, can this population afford the course you're selling? I.e., do they have purchasing power? And this idea of purchasing power, I want to give a credit to Alex Hormozi for like mentioning this concept of purchasing power, because this is where I ran across it. But basically, again, this seems like common sense, but you know, sometimes when we're in the throes of a course idea and we just wanted to get it out there, we don't consider this question, which is basically, can the people that are going to purchase my course, can they actually afford it, right? Like, and part of this means maybe that you niche down into a population that has spending power, right? Like, let's say that, I don't know, you've got a course for partners of attorneys who struggle with, you know, alcohol use, right? Now, what you may want to do is niche that into, you know, attorneys who've made partners at big law firms, right? Because generally those folks will also have spending power. And so it's just things to think about, like, right, once you tap in and find it sort of a population to work with your course, likely you're going to probably have to go one to three more layers deeper in order to really identify the subset of that population that has the spending power. This is actually a mistake that I made with my own course, which is initially when we started, you know, I was pretty confident, like I, you know, this is a whole other episode, but you know, when I first started the Healthcasters course, I was like, I just want a course for health, wellness, and fitness podcasters. But the problem is that sounds niched on paper, but in practicality, it's not niched at all because, you know, how do you speak to like every health, wellness, and fitness expert out there when it comes to a sales page, right? So then I was like, you know what, like I'm going to niche it down to therapists because these are my people. I'm a psychologist, like, you know, I can understand sort of the dilemmas and the struggles and all of these things we have as mental health providers. But even that was not niched enough because what happened is, you know, some of our colleagues like bought the podcasting course, and in hindsight, they probably should not have bought it because they were too early on in the business journey to be launching a podcast. So practically, for example, you know, you might have a therapist that was like less than a year into private practice, right? So they're like, okay, I'm gung-ho and want to build out a podcast. But as soon as they have like a dip in income, they're like, oh my gosh, I got to cut my expenses. Okay, podcasting's a thing that I gotta get rid of and I got to figure out something else, right? Where I finally kind of niched down into was successful therapists in private practice that feel like they have a bigger message to share beyond the therapy room. And we're still working on this, but I started setting some criteria for the Healthcasters course. Like you had to be 5+ years into business to even consider this course. You had to be at or near 6 figures in revenue to be creating the course. And the main reason is because there's also a practical thing, right? Like something like podcasting requires costs, i.e. like a podcast editor is often the biggest cost. Because if you want to see some examples of yours truly editing a podcast, go check out the first 13 episodes of this. They were atrocious because I have no background in editing. And I was like, I got to like delegate this out because that is not my zone of genius. And so, but there's costs to podcasting, right? And so in some ways, I think niching down and identifying the population that has spending power is actually an act of responsibility toward the population that we're creating our online course for. The fifth question to answer is this a population that is easy to target and find online? So this, again, seems really basic, but what you want to do is go online, look if there are forums. So it could be like Reddit forums, Facebook groups, LinkedIn groups. Are there mailing lists out there? Are there conferences where this population sort of gathers? Are there YouTube channels that are speaking to this population? And now you don't need like massive numbers, but I think you really want to find like a large enough population when there seems to be like active conversations that are happening in this population. A second sort of, and so this easy to target thing, you might be like, Mel, okay, that seems to make sense, but what is like the long-term implications of this? So one of the things that I learned is, you know, obviously with a course, you know, just having it on your website typically is not going to get people to buy the course, right? So you typically need to offer them some sort of high value, be of genuine service to them, and then invite them to join the course, right? So practically what this means is like, for example, you know, one of the things that we teach in our mastermind is actually to set up both a live and then as well as an evergreen webinar that's related to your course idea, and then provide high value teaching and then leading to an invitation to the online course. With those webinars, typically you need to run ads, right? Like for example, Facebook ads to that webinar sales page so that folks in that niche or that population can find the webinar and they can sign up, right? So if they're not out there online and or they're really hard to find, it just becomes a lot harder to market that course, which then will limit the growth potential of that course. The sixth question to consider is this a growing niche or a growing concern? So whatever your course idea is, does this presenting concern seem to be kind of a growing concern? Now, the best way to sort of check on this is to just Google the presenting concern that you're talking about and do comma like statistics or projections for 10, 15, 20 years out, and see if like this is going to be a concern. So for example, like that erectile dysfunction, right? Like that's generally going to be a growing concern. Now, generally, you know, if you're creating a course in the mental health space, generally those sort of concerns will be growing, but we always want to, you know, double check with data to make sure that it is actually a growing one. Another way to check if it's growing is if there's like significant revenue or income being spent into that space. So this is something I did a quick search of when I launched the Healthcasters course, but in hindsight, I'm so glad I hit it. But this would have been really something like, man, if I didn't, like, I think this would have been a big reason why the Healthcasters course would not have worked. You know, with podcasting, right, there are now companies spending billions of dollars every year to be in the space, whether it's podcast advertising, hosting services. There are conferences on podcasting. There are podcast editors and all of these like entire teams being set up for podcasting. There are people that build out, you know, podcasting setups and studios and all of these things, right? And I see all of that and I realize, like, you know, generally when there is money being spent in a space, that also means that there is a population that has spending power in that space as well. The seventh and final question, what I would love for you to consider is, are there others out there who are also creating information products for this niche? Now, information products are things like online courses. It could be like, you know, paid, like maybe scripts or templates or something like that as well, online books. So the reason I asked for that, or I would recommend that, is because, you know, generally, like, you want to find populations that are willing to consume information in a digital medium versus just sort of one-to-one service. And that can give you sort of a rough idea of, like, whether, you know, there's the viability of our online course. So those seven questions, again, are, have people paid me one-on-one for this course idea? Two is, can I see myself being in this space for 10 plus years? Three is this course idea a massive pain versus an annoying inconvenience? Four is, can this population afford the course that you're selling? right? Do they, i.e., do they have purchasing power? 5 is this population easy to target and find online? 6, is this a growing need or a growing population? 7, and final one is, are there others that are creating info products for this niche? And so I think when you sort of take the totality of those, I think that can give you a really good idea for your online course.
Hey there, thank you so much for tuning in to today's session. Just wanted to also let you know that we have a free email newsletter that goes out every week. You can download it over at sellingthecouch.com/newsletter. Basically, that newsletter contains some of the stuff that's happening behind the scenes with STC and also with my life and how I'm balancing and trying to balance being both an entrepreneur as well as building a life around my family and my health as well. And it also contains the latest podcast episode and some of the stuff that I'm doing on LinkedIn, some of the strategies and things that are working for me. And then finally, a brand new section called On Mel's Mind, where I take a video or a book or a blog post or something like that that's inspiring me for that week, and I share how I'm implementing it both in my life and in my business. Again, you can download that over at sellingthecouch.com/newsletter. And if you are one of the 3,700 colleagues that have been a part of the email newsletter, I so appreciate you, and I'm grateful for your support. We genuinely try to make these helpful, and just based on the data and based on the feedback we're getting, it seems like we're doing a really good job. So appreciate you, and I hope that you have a great day.